Welcome back to another episode of Uncle Takes. We're your hosts, Monica and Tank. And today we're doing Ghosted, which came out in 2023. It's a romantic comedy starring Ana de Armas and Chris Evans and Adrian Brody. Ana de Armas plays Sadie, Chris Evans plays Cole, and Adrian Brody plays the villain. There's a few other people in the movie, but they don't really play a role. They do more cameo appearances. Some names that I recognized: Amy Sedaris, Anthony Mackie, who's Papa Doc from 8 Mile, Ryan Reynolds, and then John Cho, who is Harold from Harold and Kumar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kumar seems more like a Cal Penn name, I think.
Yeah. There might have been some other people that I just didn't recognize, slash they don't really play a role in the movie, so I didn't bother to write them down. But Ghosted is, a rom-com. Pretty standard stuff. Chris Evans plays Cole, and Cole is a writer who studied agriculture and history, but moved back home to help his family farm. He meets Sadie, played by Ana de Armas, at the farmer's market, and they romantically bicker, which leads to an all-night date. After returning to the farm the next day, despite Chris Evans's text messages, Sadie proceeds to never respond to any of his Apple iMessages, which leads him to track the Apple AirTag he accidentally left in her purse to London on his Apple iPhone. Upon arriving in her vicinity, he's abducted by bad guys, but subsequently saved by Sadie before the torture began. So he's unscathed. He learns that she's not, in fact, an international art curator, but an international spy. We then meet villain Adrian Brody, and he currently possesses a chemical weapon that he plans to sell, but in order to sell it, he needs the passcode from the Taxman, which is Sadie's moniker. I don't know, she is some reason the Taxman, I never got that. They ultimately lure Adrian Brody to a Gravitron restaurant that has no safeguards to sell him the passcode, and they launch him out of the restaurant after killing all 40 armed hitmen and bounty hunters who also happen to be there, while simultaneously keeping this delicate chemical weapon safe. And then the movie ends and they live happily ever after. So I think a good spot to start at this movie is when they meet, because they meet at a farmer's market, and I think it's a somewhat cute scene. But it's got some similarities to a recent movie we've done, insofar as how do these fucking people keep abandoning their day's responsibilities in order to go on day-long dates? Like, how can they just drop everything? Is it not putting somebody out when they do this?
Yeah, well, he had his own... Well, I mean, she was, I think, on a break from spying, I think. I think she had a sabbatical.
Yeah, she had recently had to kill her good friend. Was Elena her good friend?
No, see, it seemed like Elena was just actually like a rival operative.
Oh, At some point she said she was the enemy. So maybe she was double dipping. I don't know. Not important. But yeah, she was on a break. She was taking a break from spying.
She was traitorous, maybe. Yeah, it wasn't clear. And he ran his own stand selling, I don't know, what looked like small planters of, I think, bee-pollinated something? Herbs, maybe? Or flower? He said something, they had better taste, I think. So I didn't think it was specifically flowers, but it looked like little herb plants.
Yeah, could have been.
But he just bounced. Yeah, he just left it. I assumed one of his friends cleaned up, maybe? Although it didn't look like he had employees or anything. It looked like it was a family... He works on the family farm. So you would think like maybe the family would go help him at the farmer's market, but they absolutely did not. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, but apparently these people can just bounce anytime. And
it's fucking crazy because, like, I don't think farmer's markets are a daily thing. That's a Saturday thing, right? Like, there's no fucking daily farmer's market you can go to. So that is where you get your week's income. And for you to just abandon it and just say, ah, fuck this, I'm over it, you're kind of really putting your family out, you know?
Well, okay, so he had to go back and help on the farm, he says, because his father got sick, right? This is sort of jumping ahead and behind and whatever, but...
Yeah.
He says he has to go help on the farm because his father was sick. But this farm isn't like... It doesn't appear to be like a working farm. Because it's not like a field of crops. Like, they're outside of D.C. Which I imagine they had to be because it's, like, near Langley. But, like, not that there can't be farms there. I'm sure there are. But this... It looked like a very nice farm. Like, sort of like a wealthy people farm. Not like... A struggling to get by farmer who needs his kids to come help because he's hurt.
No, it was the classiest farm I've ever seen. Like, I don't know how farmers aren't thriving, you know, in this country. They're not just living in the lap of luxury over there. They're fucking struggling. They're laboring. They're up at four, and that's just not what this farm was. This farm, I don't know. Maybe he's using his agriculture degree to germinate very specific strains of plants, and he can sell them for an arm and a leg to these.
At
suckers
the farmer's
in
market,
D.C. that just had way too much fucking money? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and his sister also seems to live at home. I don't know if she's also helping on the farm or if she's just, like, shit-talking him and that's what she's there for. But, like, yeah, it wasn't clear. It didn't look like his mom was a farmer. It also didn't look like anyone in the house was a farmer. Like, you see them do farm work and they're just, like, pulling a stump out of, or, like, pulling a tree out of a lake and then... stacking some wood in the back of a truck at some point. Like, I guess they just couldn't get any crops for this movie. So they did nothing involving crops. I don't know.
Yeah, it was tough. Way too much white furniture to be farmers. That's for damn sure.
So yeah, he works on the farm. They bounce and they just go on like an all-day date where they go for coffee and then he wants to raise... he says the exorcist is scary. And then she says she's not scared of anything. She says she doesn't think movies are scary. And then he says, let me race you, and if I win, you'll tell me what scares you. And it's like, you probably could have just asked. Like, I understand the movie needs you to race her for some reason, up some steps. Even though before he does it, he takes out his inhaler. I don't know where all his confidence is coming from. And she beats him in this, like... Racing upstairs is not a good cinematic race, I don't think. Because it's hard to, like, show, like, the long shot, it feels like, of, like, people racing. But yeah, they race up the stairs, and he's very winded. Apparently this farm work isn't, like, a ton of cardio. And
he's in pretty good shape. Despite the inhaler hit, yeah, it's only, like, three flights of stairs.
Yeah, he's played by Chris Evans the whole time. And he references later, like, you know, after... they sleep together, he's like, oh, what you felt is farm strength. And it's like, okay, but, like, where's the farm, like, cardio? You know, did that not come up? Or was he just doing, like, powerful lovemaking, but at, like, a sort of, I don't know, slowed down pace because of farming? It doesn't matter. So, yeah, then he refuses to sell her a plant that isn't his plant. He's minding someone else's stand.
Yeah, because she's off smoking doobies in the hut or something.
Yeah, they think this lady saying she's going to get high is super funny because they say it like 12 times. And it's just like, we know. Okay, it's fine.
These are all farmers, right? That studied agriculture, that live on farms. It's like, they're probably not going to turn their nose up at somebody smoking weed. Not only that, but this guy's a writer, too. It's just like, of course they're all hippies that smoke pot.
Well, I don't think she was actually just getting edible, she says. I'm surprised they weren't selling edibles at the thing. Is it legal in D.C.? I assume so. Doesn't matter. And then he refuses to sell her a plant because she says she's not home a lot for work. And then, like, this is another... Similar to the last movie watch, which was Anybody But You. He gets, like, very hostile towards her. And he just starts saying how she's, like, indifferent to the plant's life. Which doesn't seem to be the case. It just seems like she works a lot. She's not like, oh, I kill a lot of plants because of mistreatment. She's just like, oh, actually, I'm not in the house that often. Like, maybe a different plant would be more suitable. Which, like, maybe. I mean, presumably you can get a friend to water your plants if you're not around. But, yeah. So he gets, like, really angry at her, and then eventually the other lady sells her the plant, which I think she immediately breaks, right?
Yeah.
As soon as
and
she
it
gets
was
in
the initial plant. The initial plant that needs watering like every 2 or 3 days. The begonia.
Yeah, the $10 plant.
Yeah. She does smash it in her car by slamming on the brakes.
Yeah, immediately. Because then the movie does the thing where it tries to convince us these two people have chemistry. Which I think they do not. Like, I don't think there's ever a sexual tension between these two people. Is that... how did you feel about that?
I think that's accurate. Even when they were, you know, there was the sex scene. No chemistry.
Because there's parts of the movies that work just fine. But, like, it's... So, I sort of think in some ways this is... You know, we'll get to that again. But, yeah, so the movie, like, the lady just says, oh my god, there was so much sexual tension. And this actually happens a couple times in the movie. Where someone would just say there's a ton of sexual tension. And he chases after her. She finds out she's an art curator during their date, right? I mean, she's not, I guess. She tells him she's an art curator. But yeah. Again, she is not. Art curator sounds like a fake job, too. Like, people only have that in movies when they're spies. It's not like one of those movies people have in real life, you know? And then are, like, also maybe spies. But it's like, if someone told me they were an art curator, I would assume they were a spy. Because, like, I've met as many spies as I have art curators.
Yeah, like, if they had a meat route, they're definitely in the mafia, right?
You know, you'd know better than I would. So, and then, so then they're on this date, and they're at, like, the Lincoln Memorial, or at some kind of museum about Lincoln, and he's, like, talking about Lincoln. In what sounds like he's giving, like, a 7th grade book report about how Lincoln was shot. And she's like, wow, you must really like history. And he's like, well, I actually, you know, I majored in agriculture, but history is my real passion. It's like, okay, but, like, did you major in agriculture for the money? Because, like, it's not like he majored in finance and he was like, oh, but I always wanted to do art. It's like, you major in agriculture, like, for what? I guess for the farm. But, like, you couldn't, and when he says, like, oh, he's really into history, it's specifically the history of agriculture. He acts like he had to put his history, you know, passion on the back burner to do agriculture. But he's writing about the history of, or the rise and falls of great civilizations, you know, in the role agriculture plays. Like, it's like, what are we talking about here? Like,
maybe he did it for the money. I mean, they're clearly fucking killing it over there.
This farm is clearly killing.
He's got, I don't know why a farmer would ever need an iPhone, you know?
I think most people have iPhones now, I think.
Even farmers?
Yeah, I think even... What do you think a farmer is, I guess?
It's a fucking rough lifestyle. And you, I mean, you're just looking for basics. I don't know why you'd need a smartphone.
I think a smartphone is a basic at this point.
Oh, boy, that sucks.
Does it?
It does.
A lot of people like their iPhones.
Yeah, I hate going to restaurants. You gotta scan the menu instead of just handing you a fucking menu. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we're getting away from the movie.
I guess, yeah. So they race. Oh, she said she fled her country at 6 years old. I assume the country is Cuba, right?
Well, so Ana de Armas is Cuban.
Yeah,
so
she's Cuban Spanish, right? But yeah, so she's Cuban, but they don't say it's Cuba.
No, they just say that they left on a raft and arrived 5 days later.
Right. I don't know if they're, like, not allowed to say Cuba, but, like, I feel like you would just be like, oh, like, you know, me and my mom left Cuba when I was 6. But she said, left my country. It's like, oh, like, do you not want to know what country? I mean, I guess he just guessed what country, you know? But it seems like, I don't know. That just, it seemed weird that they didn't say it.
Well, so, I mean, if you're foreign-born, can you be president? If you're foreign-born, can you work as a CIA spy? Or are you kind of, like, ruled out just for safety reasons?
Well, I think the qualifications to be president are in the Constitution, I think. Whereas the qualification to be a CIA agent, I don't think are. So they might have different standards.
So you think it's possible?
Yeah, I think that they'll take they'll take anybody. You know, they're only supposed to operate on foreign soil, right? So they probably need people who seem like foreigners. So they probably can't be too picky about that.
I guess.
I don't know. Again, that part was did bother me. I assume they wanted to recruit everybody. So then she ghosts him, I guess, by not responding to a couple text messages and a couple emojis. Because well, she goes...
Because he goes back to the farm, and then... I don't know. Is this only in movies that this happens? I hope. But, like, his family is just all up in his business about... They're just incredibly open. And coming from a pretty conservative family, I don't know. That sort of openness with who you're dating and who you're sleeping with and, like, to what extent you hooked up with them, sharing those details with your family just fucking weirds me out. I don't know how you feel about that.
I mean, I think it depends on the family. I don't know. It didn't seem, like, so out there that, like, I couldn't imagine my family talking about that. Although, at some point, the sister, like, he comes back home and his mom is trying to, you know, give him some food or something. And his sister just goes, he just came back from having sex with a stranger, not, I don't know, what he called, storming Normandy or something. And it's like, why, like, is that what he told them? Like, when he was out, he was, like, specifically told them that, you know? I don't know. But I don't know. I think a lot of families are pretty open, you know? It wouldn't be out of the ordinary to say that he met someone and went out with her and, you know, they sort of filled in the blanks from there. And I don't know. His family seems a little goofy, but I don't know. It didn't seem that way. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you and your family talk about, but it might be just different family styles.
Guess so.
You know? But then he gets to London. His mom thinks he should stalk her, which he's definitely doing.
Oh, for sure.
And he goes to London and gets abducted by, I don't know, miscellaneous thugs, it looks like. Because they think he's the tax man. Because he was following the air tag that was in her bag.
Yeah, I guess he air tags everything in his life, and he had air tagged
his inhaler, which
which he left in her bag when they were racing up three flights of stairs.
Right.
I guess I don't know how these air tags work, because in the first part, it comes up a lot. In the first part of the movie, he uses his Apple AirTag location to, like, find the cash box at his farmer's market stand that is less than 5 feet from him.
Yeah, like, it can identify the spot on a table that the thing's on.
Yeah, like, literally arm's length to the right, it can help you there. But whenever you get to London, it can only, for some reason, get you within, like, I don't know, 50 yards of where the AirTag is.
Yeah, because he's, like, under a bridge. But it's not like he finds the inhaler on the ground, right? So, like, was she just directly above him? And the AirTag just didn't have a good sense of verticality?
I got no fucking idea.
It's not like she's standing there and they pick him instead, right?
Yeah, he never sees her. Like, he looks high and low. He goes, like, through the tunnel on the other side of the tunnel. He looks at everyone going out of the club whose entrance is in the tunnel. And when we say tunnel, it's like, you know, maybe 20 yards deep. It's just enough for a bridge overhead.
Yeah, it's like a walking tunnel, not like a car tunnel.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. For some reason, air tags can simultaneously get you within 5 feet on a table. Maybe that's open air. And then as soon as there's just any sort of interference above, shit goes out the window and it's totally useless. I don't know.
But she's like, you fell into the trap that they left. Like, what was the trap, though? Because, like, he fell into the trap that was her being the bait, I guess. But they can't trap her with her air tag. Like, or his air tag. Like, none of that makes any sense. Like, how were they going to trap her?
I have no clue.
Like, if he didn't show up, there was no way she was going to show up instead. He was just, like, some guy who wanted... Like, were they just going to kidnap anyone who wandered under that bridge?
There were a whole bunch of people under that bridge, like, a minute before he was under that bridge alone. And it's not like he's dressed like a spy, you know? He's dressed just like a normal guy.
It, you know,
and he came from the airport with his fucking satchel on, and he's got a 3-day roller bag that he's dragging behind him, and he's, like, looking on his phone as if he's calling an Uber, and then these bad guys just fucking abduct him as if he's a criminal, like a mastermind CIA spy. And it's just like, why are they so... They have no clue what he looks like.
Yeah,
they don't know what... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. It would have sort of made sense, right? And here's what I'm thinking. If the criminals, like, if you hear before they get there, so I guess they don't... You don't know that she's a spy till he gets abducted. Until a little bit afterwards, I guess. Until she rescues him, right?
Correct.
It would have made a little bit of sense if he goes down there, picks up her bag, because that would explain both why he was down there, because that's where the AirTag would be. And then the criminals see him pick up the bag as if it was like a dead drop or something and abduct him because of that, right?
Yeah, that never happens. Instead, he's just like a guy looking
at like,
his phone calling
Uber.
They're
just like, oh,
there's a guy. Yeah, like, hey, this is the only dude, and we knew that it would happen exactly at 10:03 on the dot. And it's just like, he's here. He's the guy.
And then they abduct him, and they're going to torture him with a bunch of insects?
With a bunch of bugs, yeah. Increasingly levels of pain. I don't know what scale they reference.
The Schmidt scale. Schmidt, yeah, that's like a good thing. Have you not heard? I've heard of that.
No.
Yeah.
Good to know.
But it's sort of weird that that's like a very specific thing that never comes back, right?
The killing with the bugs?
Yeah, none of the bug stuff ever comes back.
No, that's because I guess at that point they kidnapped him from London and shipped him to Pakistan.
Yeah.
So
which was
he wakes up and he's in a cave in Pakistan with all sorts of bugs in aquariums around him getting tortured by I don't know, the fucking
Blake Nelson?
Yeah, the henchman from Holes, like the camp counselor from Holes. Yeah, it was weird. And then
this
Man
is
of the
like
Arm.
That's a character, too, that, like, I thought could have been funny, because his whole thing is, like, he's fanboying over the tax man that's Chris Evans, that he thinks is Chris Evans, and he's also, I don't know, sort of, like, a weirdo, but he had some, like, funny lines, but I just thought the scene in general just didn't really work, like, it just wasn't entertaining or anything. And I think Tim Blake Nelson is usually good and stuff, but yeah, it just didn't work for me, unfortunately. And it felt like it could have, you know, like it felt like it was, because it was just a goofy little scene, and it could have just been for the comedy. It was just, you know, it was only there for comedy and exposition, right? And
yeah,
because all the other characters in the scene die except for Chris Evans, so all you need character development out of that. But they just they don't really do it. She busts in and starts shooting people, right?
Yes.
And he's, like, not that surprised for some reason. He, like, is sort of surprised, and he's kind of, like, angry. But she comes in and just shoots a bunch of people. It's a very, like, violent movie, which I guess makes sense, because they're, like, you know, CIA people. But, like, she comes in just, like, not even with, like, a pistol, like, in most of these movies. Like, she comes in with, like, I don't know, like, what are they usually called?
Like a shoulder-mounted like, MP5 or something? Submachine gun?
It's like a submachine gun, yeah. It sort of has, like, the long magazine. It's, like, handheld, but it's a machine gun. It's a single-hand machine gun-looking thing. I don't know a lot about guns. And she just shoots a bunch of people. And then, like, as they're escaping, you know, after he realized she's an agent, at some point he just delivers the line, like, art curator my ass. And you're like, yeah, no, like, it's pretty clear she was lying. Like, that was obviously, right? Like, but he's like, that, it feels like that line got, like, swapped around. Like, he should have said that before she explained the situation to him. But she explains, and then he's like, oh, yeah, you're definitely not art curator. She's like, no, I know. I told you I worked for the CIA. Like, that already happened. You know?
Yeah, missed opportunity.
And then yeah, she, you know, they'd have a little banter. Their banter just isn't good. Like, their banter just doesn't work. They don't make sense together. Chris Evans, like, delivering his lines, like, not, I don't think they're ADR'd for the most part. There are some that you can definitely tell were ADR'd, but it just feels like he's not delivering, like, that he's not speaking to her. And I don't know if she's just, like, I don't know what her, like, comfort level with English is, but it just, her speech pattern is just, like, made it so it didn't flow super well a lot, and I don't know, it just didn't, the banter really didn't land for most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's comfortable with English. I think she does have a pretty thick Spanish accent, but
yeah, but it was more like the speed. Like, I can speak Spanish but not quickly, you know. It sort of, a lot of times it felt like if I was trying to speak in a second language, just like, it's hard to deliver like the witty banter if you're sort of thinking before every word type of thing.
Gotcha.
But I don't know, maybe she does, maybe that's just how she was directed. I actually don't think I've seen her in anything else. I've heard she was really good in, I think, James Bond. Like, she's in one of the James Bond movies for 10 minutes, and she's, like, really good in it. So it's possible that, I mean, it's possible that's why they cast her in this.
Oh, I'm not sure. I mean, she was in Deepwater. Oh, is No Time to Die in 2021?
Yeah, she was in No Time to Die, yeah. So, and I know she's a lot of people. I haven't seen any of the James, that's a James Bond, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
James Bond. Yeah, I haven't seen any of those in a while, so, but I've heard that she was very good in that. So, you know, that could be why she was, but that's different than being a sort of a romantic comedy lead. So, I don't know. Then they run out. At some point, they say, don't use stalker as a verb. But, like, there is a verb. Because she says, you stalkered me. But it's like, you stalked me is the verb, right?
I think so.
It's not like stalker doesn't have a verb. It just seems like he's making fun of her, like, poor English. It seems like he's, like, razzing her for not knowing, like, verb conjugations. Like, I don't know. It seemed like a strange... I understand it was supposed to be a joke, but, like, it just didn't... Especially since she seems to speak English as a second or third language. It just seems like he was mocking her. Like, that is a word. It's just, like, she didn't know exactly the conjugation, right? Like, I don't know.
That's the banter. That's the endearing banter.
It's the banter. It's that part. So they get out of the torture cave. And then a bunch of guys are chasing them with, like, warthogs, I guess, from Halo.
Oh, yeah, jeeps with 50 cal machine guns mounted on top of them. And they hijack a school bus from a band of gypsies?
I don't think we say gypsy.
Is gypsy not a good word to use? They don't refer to themselves as that?
I think it's a slur for what would be, like, the Romani people. I think gypsy sort of phased out.
Oh, learn something new every day. Sorry to those people.
Also, is that what those people were? I assume they were just Pakistani people.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Did they have, like, a Roma population there?
Couldn't tell you. They had a really weird fucking looking school bus that was converted to be there.
Again, don't think it was a school bus, right?
Was it not a school bus?
It looked like adults.
Yeah. I'm saying it was a converted school bus.
Oh, okay, it was a converted school bus. So, yeah, why have your torture cave on a bus route? Is my question.
That's a very good question. Like, yeah.
Is that how they got there? And they kick these people out, which, like, at first I was like, okay, that's, like, kind of obnoxious to them, because they're leaving these people in the desert. But given what happens on this bus, it, like, sort of makes sense, because there's a lot of gunshots, a bunch of evil guys just, like, jump in the bus and, like, try to stab them and shoot them. There's a lot of stuff that happens. They have, like, a big action scene. It's whatever. I mean, the action scenes are, I think, fine in this movie. It's just kind of...
You don't think three jeeps with 50 cal machine guns mounted on top of them shooting at the front of a bus? Like, the bus was traveling backwards, and then the jeep is traveling forward, and the guy is shooting the 50 cal machine gun at the bus as he's, like, 20 yards away. He would have disabled that bus in a matter of seconds.
Yeah, I think people just have bad aim in movies. I'm, like, sort of fine with it.
Mm. Guess so.
You know?
There's all sorts of unbelievable shit that happens in this movie, so you can't get hung up on anything, any semblance of reality, because you have to suspend all that.
Yeah, I was fine with that. Suspending all my disbelief, you know? So then they meet up with one of her friends, who I think is Mako. Right?
Oh, yeah, her former lover and fellow hitman?
Fellow CIA agent. Yeah, I mean, I guess hitman, but some kind of, you know, operative. And he lost a hand, I guess, in the course of dating her? Or in the course of his work. But it seemed like they related it to being with her. So, I don't know. But then he immediately gets killed, right?
But he's like, this is my town. Nothing happens in my town without me knowing.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like,
shot in the head because...
There's a lot of ironic stuff going on. Because there's a bunch of bounty hunters that Adrian Brody sent after them?
Yes. I guess Adrian Brody plays Levesque, and Levesque has a briefcase that has a chemical weapon in it that he intends to sell. And in order to get into the briefcase, he needs the passcode. And presumably the tax man, Sadie, has the passcode, and that's why he puts the bounty for $1 million to bring the tax man to him alive.
That's what they were torturing Cole for, was for the passcode.
Yes.
Right. And then there's like a chain of bounty hunters who were each trying to capture him and then kill the previous one. And actually, this was like the funniest like 1 minute sequence of the movie for me.
Yeah, I think so.
I thought some of this worked. Anthony Mackie shows up. So you mentioned Anthony Mackie was Papa Doc. He also plays the Falcon in Captain America. Chris Evans is Captain America. And then later in this chain, Sebastian Stan, who plays the Winter Soldier, shows up. And he is also in that movie with Captain America. I think maybe that's sort of why.
Oh, well, that makes it more fun.
It was those two guys. I don't know. I mean, I think it was meant to be like a casting gag. And you say Anthony Mackie as Papa Doc, which I feel like is not what people know him for.
And I didn't even mention Bucky.
I know. I assumed you didn't recognize him.
Yeah. It was dark. I don't know what to tell you.
Because we're good 20-something years from 8 Mile, so.
Yeah, but I still like that movie than any of the Captain America movies.
Okay, I mean, fair enough. But I mean, I think that's why he's associated with Chris Evans, you know?
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense. It's good.
I assume. I mean, it could have been anything.
Regardless, the scene was still good.
Yeah, I thought the scene was fun.
Because it was just like hitmen, you know, killing the other hitman in order to take them hostage, and they're just sort of trading out hitmen. It worked regardless.
Each of the hitmen have like their own little bit and their own persona, and they, I don't know, get into it. They, you know, they gave him a couple of seconds to do a thing. And then at some point, so they escape from all the hitmen, and they end up on a beach in a, I think they get captured. They're on a plane, and then they jump out of the plane, right?
Yeah, there's a struggle on the plane, and then they share a parachute and land on a remote island in the Arabian Sea, I think.
Oh, is that okay? Yeah, I guess they get rescued immediately after this. So yeah, then they make like a hut out of the She's unconscious during this, I think. He's the one who engineers this escape, and you know, then they are in like a little hut made out of the parachute, and they're sort of like doing a little beach vacation. I think it's only for the night, right? Or like, it's not a long period of time, I don't think.
No, I think it's, you know, 6 to 8 hours,
you know. And he treats her like wounds, I guess, and at some point I think she says, "Oh, in my line of work, it's better to be alone." And he says, "Is it?" And I think, like, definitively it is, right?
Oh, 100%.
Like, it seems like having a family as a CIA agent would be, like, a massive liability.
Huge liability.
Like, I'm sure you can, I guess, but, like, she was away too long to water the houseplant. So, like, I don't know. Unless you find someone who, like, wants to go CIAing with you, like, it seems like, yeah, it probably is better to be alone in her line of work. So then Adrian Brody's guys come in on these ATVs like really fast, so that these people just sitting on the beach, like not defending themselves, have a ton of time to prepare, because they're really loud. It seems like they maybe could have done it a little stealthier. And they don't really accomplish any. I guess they steal the Aztec back.
Yeah, the chemical weapon.
Right. And then the United States Marines just come and shoot a couple of them and rescue Cole and Sadie, and bring them back to Langley.
Yep.
And then they get hooked up to a lie detector, both at the same time for some reason, to be asked different, like interrogated by Jackson, maybe, who is like one of her coworkers. I think his name is Jackson.
The black guy and the Indian girl.
Yeah, I think Jackson was the guy, and he's in a couple scenes. And yeah, again, this is, you know, they talk about, you know, themselves, and you know, the lie detector lady's doing some bits, I think it like could have, it almost worked. Like there were moments like you definitely like saw where they were going with the humor. She's basically like just doing the thumbs up and thumbs down, but she's sort of doing it at inappropriate times. And just sort of not taking it super seriously. And I think like some of that like could have been funny. I think they probably should have done it like, you know, done another take of it and it would have landed a little bit better.
Yeah, because she's like treating it like a reality TV show because they're bantering as they're being lie detected simultaneously. And they're asking questions that are sort of like, I don't know, provocative.
Yeah, like she says it was a mistake to go back for him. And he's like really offended, even though like it meant going to save him. She gave up the super weapon. So it seems like it kind of was a mistake to do that because of all the, you know, people that might be killed by this biological weapon. I mean, I get being offended by that, but like at the same time.
So, but they're interrogating them together, like the girl and Monty is the guy's name. What's their goal? Like, what are they trying to find out there?
They think she is a traitor and gave up the Aztec.
Ah, okay.
I think.
But they pass the test, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The group. It seems like if you're going to interrogate two people, you should separate them.
100%. Yeah.
So they can't coordinate their lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
These people aren't trying to coordinate. They're mostly trying to bicker. And again, this is a scene where the lie detector lady tells us there's a ton of sexual tension. I think she's wrong about that. You know, I just don't think like they. I don't think these people will have chemistry. It says that Scarlett Johansson was originally supposed to play this part. Scarlett Johansson, you might know, is in Captain America and the Winter Soldier.
She is.
As Black Widow. And her and Chris Evans like spend a lot of time going on a spy mission together.
Oh, do they have chemistry?
I think they have more chemistry than this in this movie, and I think that would have worked a lot better. But I don't know. So then they need... He makes fun of her. He's like... Or he's not like make fun of her, but he sort of insults her by saying, oh, you're afraid you might lose somebody, just like you lost your mother. Because she told him her mother died when she was a child. It just seems like a very, like, aggressive thing to say to somebody. Be like, the loss of your mother has traumatized you. And I view that as, like, a character flaw. Because, like, that's how he presents it, right?
Definitely over the top. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he always feels like he thinks he's the victim in this situation. Which, like, I guess he kind of is in the... getting kidnapped sense, but like in terms of their like romantic relationship, he really thinks he was done wrong. The movie doesn't seem to think he was, you know, or like think he's wrong about that. You know, it's not like he has a sense of entitlement and the movie's trying to like punish him for that. It seems like the movie's kind of cool with him. So then he sees a picture of a dead of like an agent, right? Or like, I think it was maybe Elena, or maybe it was just a picture. Yeah, I think it was Elena. It was the girl who, when we meet Sadie at the beginning, she's talking to her handler. We're supposed to think it's her therapist, I think. And she mentions the death of this lady and how it affected her. And we see a picture of her, and next to her is a plant, which I guess is famous for the Aztecs, right? Or has some relationship to Aztec?
Yep.
Something?
Yep, it was an Aztec plant.
Yeah, it was like an Aztec plant. And then he, like, makes the leap that the passcode is the DNA sequence of this plant?
Yeah. Right? I guess they did have the briefcase when they were on the island, right?
Yeah.
So, and on the briefcase, the code, like it said, the letters ATGC.
Right.
Which are the building blocks for DNA.
Yeah, but like, so when they unlock the thing, though, they don't do it like a combination lock. They seem to have to stick a USB into it, right?
Yeah, there's just a program on any USB. They load the code, and it just goes in, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's the fucking answer. That's
and at
code.
Some point, they send the first one over to the person?
Yeah, they send the A code, and it's just 1/4 of the code.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and somehow...
It can take one USB at a time, or it can take one USB, because when they do the second part, they just do it... I thought they were going to do three more, but I think they just do one more.
No, it's just one more that has the final three codes on it.
So you can load any USB on, and it will do the code in whatever increment you've given it, I guess.
I wonder what that programming language was.
Yeah, I mean, listen. I guess, like, maybe... But, like, it's not even, like, that's not explained in the scene, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
It's like, when you see him make this leap, you're just like... Like, it's not like his specific knowledge... His specific knowledge of, like, botany, I guess, gets them, you know, that far. But then he just makes this entire... Like, it seems like maybe she could come in with, like, oh, here's the password, might be. But he just seems to, like, understand this all... In terms of how we, like, how it'd be, you know, interesting if he, like, saw the plant in the picture and was like, oh, that's, like, a interesting plant. Like, that's very rare and, you know, is actually famous for the, you know, the Aztecs.
And then she somebody was like, else in the CIA was, like, pieced yeah, like it together?
Like, if they did their fucking jobs, yeah. Yeah. It's weird for him to be wandering by and be like, oh, my God, the fucking password. You wouldn't believe it. It's like, how would you know? You're a plant guy. You know?
Well, in the beginning of the movie, he comes a long way in this movie from a development perspective. Because whenever he's in the cave in Pakistan, he's willing to hold a gun, but he's never shot it at somebody, and he freezes, and he says, you know, I'm used to shooting tin cans, not people.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then by the end, he's like a fully trained fighter assassin guy working for the CIA. Like, I don't know, he just went to He was thrown into it, you know, immersion therapy to become a CIA agent and just absorbed it all in a matter of a weekend international CIA trip with Ana de Armas. And he's now an agent.
Yeah, well, so that one's funny, too. She hands him a gun and says, can you shoot it? He's like, oh, yeah. And then when she gets, like, in a fight with somebody, she's like, shoot him! And then he freezes up. And she's like, what happened? I thought you could shoot. And he's like, yeah, but just at tin cans. It's like... But, like, when she handed you the gun, what do you think she wanted you to do with it during this escape? Like, did you think you were just going to have to mow down tin cans on the way out of the cave? Like, obviously that wasn't what she was asking. Like,
well,
you know?
Between that moment and the moment when he freezes up, she kills, like, 30 dudes. And it's just like, hey, man, this is life or death. If you have an opportunity to kill... And she literally tells him, kill anyone that's not me. Stay right on my ass. We'll get out of here. And then he freezes up. Yeah, I don't know.
And when she walked in, she just murdered, like, 5 people.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like there was any point where, like, you know, she knocks them out and, like, it was non-lethal up till now. And then she's like, I need you to escalate this by shooting them. She'd already shot, like, 30 people at this point. And he's like, oh, you want me to shoot a guy? It's like, yeah, she just shot 30 guys. You contribute now. Like, what the fuck? She's saving you. But then they're like, okay, we need you to go, we need you, Chris Evans, to pretend to be the tax man again. Even though, do they not, I guess they don't know she's the tax man, even though they keep seeing her. I think they think she's his girlfriend, I guess.
Yeah.
Adrian Brody, even, I don't know, they sort of go back and forth with it. It's weird, because, like, they must have known that he was captured. Do they not know that he was rescued by somebody?
I'm not sure.
Who was a woman?
Survivors.
There were no survivors with those machine gun guys?
No, I think they killed them all.
Okay. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No survivors. And then he goes up to the top of a revolving restaurant. Adrian Brody and his crew seem to, like, sniff out, because they're going to meet Adrian Brody, and Adrian Brody's buyers, who appear to just be, like, an Asian group of guys.
Yep.
Although, there's an Asian guy who works with Adrian Brody who is not part of that crew. He appears to be, like, Adrian Brody's second in command. And he's, like, sort of the main, like, second guy we've seen throughout the movie.
Yep.
So they go to the top of the thing, and I think he goes table for Mr. Taxman. to the hostess. When he was asking for this reservation, like, is that just, can you just say anything to a hostess?
And I mean, I generally don't give my name, just because, you know, I'd rather pick a generic name like Steve or Tom, because it's just easier to hear over the phone.
Than Tank?
Yeah, I'm not going to say Taxman, and I'm not going to say, yeah, I'm not going to give a nickname.
Yeah, but do you ever give, like, your CIA code name? Like, is that a thing you would do if, like, you were known colloquially in the underworld as the tax man? I don't know. Either way, she seemed fine with it. So then he sits down, and he's pretending to be the tax man to Adrian Brody, who, like, they act like Adrian Brody brought a bunch of guys, and they killed the CIA guys who were backing him up. But there were only three guys sitting in a van, so they weren't, like, great backup. It was like they had him. It was like there was a sniper on the roof that had him covered or something. So I don't know what, like, changed, basically. And they go and they, like, you know, go up next to him and they all have guns. And they're like, give us the code. And he's like, I want my money first. Whatever. They have a big argument about this. And he starts telling a story about selling missiles. And it just seems to be like a made up story about nonsense. But, like, why wasn't the story about him selling missiles not just, like, a reference to... Because when we first see him, he does sell a plant to a couple. Why is he not just describing that, but with missiles? How is that not just, like, a better callback than just a reference to nothing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why do they just not do that?
That's a good point.
That's what you're supposed to do in these movies.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be describing the thing, you know?
And as the audience member, you know what you've seen, but you know, then that's what makes it funny. Yeah,
yeah. Be like, we had a great yield that year, you know, and like he's talking about crops, and they're like a yield, and he's like, yes, of plutonium. They were plutonium, you know, of nuclear missiles. What do you think? You know, either way, that's how you do it for whoever wrote this. And then it reveals that Ana de Armas shows up. I don't know what she was doing before this. I guess she was on suspension from CIA, but it was a good thing she came. She gets paid by the Asian guy and then uses that money. And that's the money she got to place a bounty on Adrian Brody.
Yeah.
And so, she makes it seem like this is... Okay.
Well, I'm just like, at that point, Adrian Brody's just rendered useless, right? Because she's now dealing with the Asian guy directly.
She cut him out, yeah.
She even says, you know, I'll sell you the thing directly for half the price. Why do Adrian Brody's people not immediately kill Ana de Armas right there?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of people with guns who just don't use them.
Although they hold off on using them until it's convenient.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, let me see how this plays out. It's like, no, you like just got cut out of this. Like, no one needs you here anymore. And also, like, she's like, yeah, I used this money to place a bounty on you for $10 million. Did she know how much he was getting? Because she says it's exactly half of his fee is how she does. She's like, I'll sell it to you for exactly half of his fee. But she didn't say $10 million. Did she know he was getting 20? Maybe she did. Maybe she found that out earlier. But
maybe
anyway,
maybe she stumbled across his Craigslist post and
for
Aztec assassins. Chemical weapon.
Because then it turns out everyone in the restaurant, except maybe the hostess, or maybe even including the hostess, was a bounty hunter. Because this takes place in like the John Wick universe, where there's just tons of bounty hunters running around.
Yeah, this is a Gravitron bounty hunter restaurant.
So everyone just pulls guns on each other. But, like, she's acting like she's actually going to need to pay the bounty hunter at the end. Because she's like, good thing I got this $10 million. And they even say that she didn't get to keep it. So, like, it doesn't seem to matter that she's like, I knew I didn't need the money until just this moment. It's like, you actually never need the money. You were just lying. Apparently, you don't need any proof of funds when you're hiring bounty hunters. You can just, like, post it on spec. So... then all the bounty hunters, like, start a gunfight. Chris Evans is in, like, the... you keep calling it Gravitron? Is that the name for a spinning restaurant?
No. That's just that there's a carnival ride that you go inside and everyone's around the outside of the wall.
Oh, okay. It's the spinning disc.
And then as it spins faster and faster, you
get
like...
The floor drops out?
Yeah, the floor drops out and you slide up. And then, you know, the floor comes back and it's like that's what I think of.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that makes sense. Because he's fighting them in the, like, the motor room, engine room, or whatever it is.
Yes.
And then he hits the gearbox, which makes it go faster. So now it's really going. I don't know why there's a faster speed on this.
I have no clue. It doesn't make any sense. The engine should have burned out.
There should not be a speed that you can turn it to such that the restaurant just starts flinging people around. That's like really, like, is there a government? There's not a, okay, it doesn't matter.
There's no OSHA there? No.
So then, yeah, so he like throws the Adrian Brody's guy into the gears and he just gets munched by that.
Uh-huh.
After the guy was kind of kicking the shit out of him, because Chris Evans in this movie is not a secret agent until like the end. They keep referencing his like high school wrestling. And like, at some point he says, like, his father keeps saying, like, tell them you were in wrestling. And I kept thinking he was going to, like, sort of do more wrestling moves. But he really doesn't. Like, at some point he says, oh, usually they tap out. And she's like, they're not going to tap out. And it's like, okay, that's a, like, and then the father references at the end again. And you're just like, why wasn't he, like, a little bit competent at this? Because he, like, does wrestling. You know?
Yeah, it didn't give him any skills. I don't know why they keep harping on it.
And they kept referencing. They didn't have to reference it, but they kept doing it. It seemed like they wanted to set up, like, oh, that's why he's, like, not useless at this. Anyways, they don't do that. So then they, he comes back up, and they kill Adrian Brody together by throwing him out of the restaurant.
Yeah, as it's spinning out of control and everyone's glued to the walls.
Yeah, it's basically just the three of them. Left at this point.
Because all the bounty hunters are dead and flung out.
Yeah, something like that.
They're the sole survivors.
And, yeah, Adrian Brody gets flung out, but they save Aztec?
Yes. Yep.
And then that's... Oh, at some point, Ryan Reynolds pops up as another one of her ex-boyfriends who, I think, lost an eye in his ear and got his dick shot off.
I think his dick was chopped off, yeah.
And, like, he just pops into, like, she's on the ground during a gunfight. He pops in and talks to her. Then he shoots near her other ear, and then he just scurries away. Like, why was he in this movie?
we don't
need him to do this same bit in every movie.
Was he in Captain America 2?
No, he's in Deadpool.
Was Captain America, is there any crossover between Deadpool and Captain America?
I don't think so. I think he just popped up because they thought it'd be funny. And they were wrong. Like, it wasn't good. It was bad. I guess it was part of the running gag where her boyfriends keep losing body parts, but it was only the second time. And he, like, didn't play into the scene anymore. He literally just scurries out of the scene just as he came. It was just, like, the weirdest diversion mid-action scene.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they just run off together and become, like, CIA agents, international CIA agents, right? And they're talking to his family, who I thought knew they were CIA agents, but apparently they didn't. Because she's still talking about being an art curator. And they're talking about, like, you know, doing art curation. And they all seem to like her. And the family's just kind of a bunch of weirdos.
Yeah, but they're still openly discussing, you know, some sensitive stuff, and it doesn't make Ana de Armas uncomfortable for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, she's been through a lot in this movie. You know, she's not scared of anything, because of that time her mother wasn't scared of anything.
That's right. I wonder if she's ever seen The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they could have brought that back, but they didn't. So that's the whole movie. And I actually think it's very different than Anybody But You. I mean, obviously, it's an action movie. But Anybody But You, I thought, worked because the leads had chemistry. And just when they were bantering, that's the part of Anybody But You that worked the best.
I thought it was just so long as you put two sexy individuals on screen, just sort of let them do their thing. It's going to be an enjoyable rom-com anyway.
No, but like this wasn't though.
Are you saying that there weren't two sexy individuals on screen?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they like disproved that theory.
Okay, great.
Because they put two very good-looking people here and just had them banter, and it was just, it didn't work at all. Like, not for a single moment.
Yeah.
Like, the worst moments of this movie are when they're just talking. The best are when you have, like, the zany sort of spy antics, which is not what I thought going into this. I was like, oh, I would enjoy the stupid spy shit more. But, like, honestly, she was better in the action scenes than she was in the talking scenes. You know? She was, like, more convincing when she was doing the shooting and the, you know, flipping the guys and whatever. I was like, okay, that's kind of... I can see this. I can see why people liked her in James Bond. And then she started to talk to him, and you're like, why do these people like each other?
Yeah, you know? I don't know. It was tough. I had to rewatch, like, the first 10 minutes, because anytime she's on screen, I just get lost. You know, I start daydreaming. I was missing plot points. I was like, shit, gotta focus. This is for the podcast.
But there, like, were no plot points. It was just so bad. It was, yeah, it was not, I don't know, but, like, so anybody but you, I thought, like, oh, some of the side characters, like, didn't quite work for me, and, like, you know, like, that's where, like, I thought maybe that movie lost points. That was, like, the only time this movie got points, you know? I was like, okay, there's a couple bits I can see them trying to do here, like, this sort of worked. I like the hitman. I actually, like, he's getting, like, a ride from the taxi driver at some point.
Yeah.
And he's, like, the taxi driver's like, oh, okay, but, you know, it seems odd that the, you know, an art curator wouldn't have an international phone plan, but, you know, go on, you do, have a good, she's like, yeah, never take a cab from the airport, it'll cost you a small fortune, and he, yeah, as he's charging him for it. And, you know, like, I thought his, like, you know, there was some bits, I didn't think they were, like, super well executed, but they sort of, that's when I thought the movie had some, like, strength to it, but, like, the chemistry of the leads was just not there. It was, I thought Anybody But You, like, was totally carried by just the leads, you know, the performances of its leads, you know, and I thought that was really, you know, it was sort of like a huge contrast, I think, to this.
Interesting. Yeah. So the way I put these notes together for the podcast is I just copy the last one forward to get the general structure. And, you know, the summary of the last one was it's loosely based on Much Ado About Nothing. And I've never seen or read Much Ado About Nothing, but, you know, this movie is a whole lot of nothing, so it just seemed like how much of that summary for Anyone But You could I keep for this one? But I decided to just start fresh. I deleted it all.
Yeah, there's a lot much spycraft in this movie, and I don't think the nothing in that title is literal. But, yeah, I thought it was strange to the extent to which this didn't work. Like, Chris Evans, I think, is usually a pretty charming actor, was, like, not very charming. Even in the early scenes when that was, like, all there was just him talking and doing some banter, it just felt like they really couldn't pull it off. You know, and if you've seen him do this as, if you've seen him as Captain America, like, in some of the later movies when he's, like, sort of a little more confident, and, or if you've seen him as, like, Johnny Storm.
In Fantastic Four.
Yeah, or just, like, any, I mean, I feel like for a lot of his movies, he sort of played, before he was Captain America, he was sort of, like, the cocky jock, you know, douchebag guy. And not that he needed to be all of that here, but he can play that sort of style of character. And he just, I don't know, his lines just aren't landing in this. Even before he interacts with her, like, even when he's just talking to, like, the fellow farmers at the market, I guess.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Fuck, for our audience sake, you know, we have to mention that he was also in Scott Pilgrim versus the World as the cocky jock, right? And then he's also in Snowpiercer, another fan favorite.
Yeah. That wasn't a rom-com, though, was it?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. Don't they eat people or something? Or they, like, use people as train pots?
No, it's like a ranked society, and if you're in the caboose, you eat fucking, like, roach power bars or something, and that's your food and sustenance. And then if you're first class, you're sipping champagne and just enjoying life. Maybe we'll do Snowpiercer at a later date, but
Yeah. It's not a similar movie to this one.
Not at all. No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah, one other thing I thought that was weird, the bug guy with the different levels of, you know, Schmidt sting ratings,
mm-hmm.
like Adrian Brody dumped out these killer ants on the one dude in the cave, and the cave was upfitted with like computer screens and monitors and shit. It didn't seem like they would be abandoning the cave from that point on. It seemed to be a regional, a good outpost that was on a bus route, which might be a desirable characteristic for a cavernous outpost.
Yeah, it's close to transit, yeah.
So why would he dump all those fucking ants out so now he just can't go back in that cave, otherwise he risks being stung by these killer ants? I thought that was weird.
So they're not actually killer ants. They just hurt a lot. And also, they'll probably die off quickly because there's no queen, right?
Is that how ants work?
I mean, they can't just create a society with no queen, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not. I guess I assumed that there was a queen inside the little box that they had. Maybe not.
I mean, I don't think the queens would sting. I don't know. I don't think so. It looked like a small box. Either way. Yeah, I understand. I don't know why you'd just pour ants on your... Because he was just trying to, like, execute one of his henchmen who failed, I guess. It seems weird to do that with a bunch of ants. Rather than, like, they could have just got, like, a single thing. The thing is, the ants are just painful. Like, they'll probably sting him to death, I guess. Because it's, like, really painful. But I don't think they're venomous. I think it's just something that... It's not like a spider that they dropped on him. You know? And it's like a Yeah, I don't know. It's weird how, like, little they got into the bugs. Because, like, there were a lot of bugs they showed for some reason. They showed, like, a giant centipede and a murder hornet they showed. And that's what... That was actually... So they did start torturing. They put the murder hornet on him. And I think Ana de Armas just sort of slaps it on his face. Even though those things are pretty big, and it feels like if you just slapped it on someone's face, it would have been like, I don't know. A lot of things. So, yeah. This movie, I thought, was not great. This was a nephew for me. I think it was, you really need to make sure your leads have chemistry, is I think what we learned from this one. And it doesn't matter if they're, like, good in other stuff, because if they don't have chemistry together, you can't really have a good... I wonder, like, what if there's a romantic comedy that is good in spite of the leads having no chemistry, or not a lot of chemistry. Or if that's just completely necessary.
Yeah, but maybe older rom-coms. I just feel like newer rom-coms all suck. I just don't enjoy them.
Right.
You know? But like, I don't know, As Good As It Gets. That's a fantastic rom-com, because it's freaking hilarious.
But do the leads have chemistry or no?
It's Jack Nicholson and Helen Hunt. And maybe they have a little bit. I don't know. It seems like a mismatch, right? So they don't have chemistry. They seem like an odd couple that ultimately end up in love.
Wait, but do they have like odd couple chemistry, or does it just not work?
I enjoy the movie, so I guess it works.
You're the only one between us who has seen it. Right? So I'm asking
you. Give it
you,
a watch. You should really.
I
mean, give
maybe
it a
I
watch.
Will, but I'm asking you your opinion of this movie that you've seen.
Yeah, but that's not like the dynamic between Helen Hunt and Jack Nicholson is not the reason to watch the movie. The reason to watch the movie is Jack Nicholson and all of his quirks, because he's OCD or obsessive compulsive.
Okay.
So you know that's the reason to watch the movie. The chemistry and whether or not he falls in love with Helen Hunt is just ancillary to me.
Okay. So maybe it can work. In this movie, I don't think it did.
Yeah, no.
You know, I guess if you like really like spy movies, this could have been interesting to you, even if the chemistry wasn't there. But I guess I'm not that into spy movies.
I think this is also... I'm glad you said it, that you can't just put two sexy people on a screen and expect the movie to be good. And for me, this proves that even the most attractive people in our society can't carry a movie if the movie's still bad. So Yeah, this was a nephew for me as well, unfortunately. Yeah.
You know, oh, and just one last thing I thought of. I mentioned this as like the first thing. So if you went into, I went into this movie knowing what it was about.
Oh, really?
Like I knew she was a secret agent.
Okay, yeah, I guess I knew that much too.
Right, that's all I knew, but I knew that part. But if you didn't, and it seemed like you weren't supposed to. Right? Like, it doesn't tell you that right away. And they sort of, she has a conversation on the phone with, I know it's Nancy McNally, it's, what, Anna DeVry-Smith?
Yeah.
On the phone, it says, like, doctor something. And you're supposed to think it's her therapist.
Yep.
And it's actually her handler. And she talks about, you know, the person's death. But, like, so you're not so, and they sort of, like, it's supposed to be, like, misleading, I think. But, like, when they say outside of Washington, they do it in, like, the spy, like, font. Like, it sort of, like, pops up on screen, like, one letter at a time and plays, like, the music, like, the sort of sound effect, like, it's sort of appearing on a screen, like, the typings, do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. As if it's, so, like, a military movie?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it could easily say, like, yeah, military installation, like that. Because they use the same one when they do it, like, CIA, you know, Langley CIA headquarters. But, like, so right at the movie, it's, like, framed like it's a spy movie. But then they, like, go through the whole rigmarole of, like, hiding it from you, sort of, until 10 minutes in. Because you don't know until she rescues him, in terms of the movie. Like, the movie hasn't told you until then. But the sort of, like, weird spy font at the beginning, sort of, I thought, gave it away for no reason. Again, I already knew it, so maybe I was just primed to believe that. But
yeah.
Anyways, not a great movie. Netflix, I think it's one of those Netflix movies.
So I watched it on Apple Plus. I think it was released on Apple Plus.
Yeah, sorry, it's an Apple TV movie, yeah.
And I guess it's the most watched Apple Plus movie that was initially released on Apple Plus. But yeah, 5.8 IMDb, 25% Rotten Tomatoes. So not great.
Yeah, it wasn't well liked, and these are two actors who I think a lot of people like, and still like. I don't think it didn't kill their careers or anything, but it's sort of interesting that yeah, it just didn't work for anybody. I didn't actually read any of the reviews. I wonder if you know they just thought there was a lack of chemistry as well. It was a surprisingly violent movie.
For sure, yeah.
Because like I mean, it didn't seem like it was like not super like sexy. Either.
No.
Like, they sleep together, but, like, you see nothing. They're, like, literally just, they, like, go under the, it's all under the cover shots where they're, like, under, they have a white sheet on top of them, and they just sort of, like, switch places occasionally. And then there is, like, a scene late when she comes out in a dress that's supposed to be, you know, she's supposed to look good. I mean, she does, she, you know, she looks fat, but it's only a PG-13 movie, I guess, but it's like, I guess you can do a lot of violence in PG-13 movie because she just comes in and starts shooting people in the head wildly. So,
yeah, like I dare you to go read the Wikipedia plot summary. It's comical. Like, here's one. She immediately uses the money to place a bounty on Adrian Brody, and they are suddenly surrounded by bounty hunters. It's like, they weren't suddenly surrounded by bounty hunters. The bounty hunters were there the whole time. But yeah, it's kind of like, where the fuck did all of them come from?
And the bounty hunters are all on her side, right?
Yeah, for some reason they don't feel compelled to kill her. Because I guess if they kill her, she won't pay? Maybe.
It seems like rather than hire a bunch of bounty hunters, you should just hire a bunch of goons. Right? Like, who aren't just like out for themselves. Just be like, okay, I'm doing like an off-book CIA agent. I just need a bunch of henchmen for the night. Like, I have $10 million to spend. Can I get like 50 guys? You know? Like, it's a real good pay for one night. You know? But, because like, how many bounty hunters are there in like, I assumed it was Seattle. Where are they? It's not Seattle, is it?
It's not the Space Needle, I don't think.
No, I think I sort of like associated with that. It might just be right outside of DC. But either way, yeah, not a good movie.
Yep.
Okay, well, what are we doing next time? We do now you see me. We think
probably Now You See Me. Looking forward to that.
That's when we'll see you.
All right.
Okay.